engaged, there were two things that were important to us as we planned the wedding. The most important thing for us was that we would plan the worship service so that it honored God. And the second most important thing as we planned our wedding was that anyone who wanted to come would be able to come to the wedding. Too many times people have to limit the wedding party, limit the number of guests on their guest lists, and I knew that my parents and our families would want to invite all of our cousins and second cousins and third cousins to the celebration, as well as their co-workers and many other friends, and that Joel and I at that time were both working in two different churches in the Denver area, and so we wanted to be able to invite all those who are part of our church family to celebrate with us. We wanted everyone to come to this joyous occasion so that no one felt left out. All would be welcome to the celebration. In our gospel lesson for today, we hear Jesus tell a story about the kingdom of heaven, and that the kingdom of heaven is like a wedding banquet. He compares the kingdom of heaven to a banquet thrown by a king for his son. The invitations have been sent out, a lavish feast has been prepared, and the messengers are sent out to gather all of those who have been invited to come and celebrate. And yet, there's a rather strange twist in the story at this point, because all of the ones who were invited to come to this amazing wedding feast don't come. It says they made light of it and wouldn't come. They went away to do other things instead. One went to his farm, another to his business. And it's a really strange twist if you think about it. I mean, just imagine the royal weddings of our time. When I was young, the great royal wedding was the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana. Everyone wanted to see that wedding. I remember spending the night at a friend's house, and we had to wake up very early in the morning to make sure that we saw all of the wedding festivities. Or more recently, the royal wedding of Prince William and Kate. Imagine you have been invited to go to the wedding. Not just to watch it on TV, but actually to be there in person for the wedding of William and Kate. To celebrate with them. To partake in the royal feast. Everyone wants an invite to that party, and you have managed to score one. And then when the time comes for the wedding, you say, I don't think I'm going to go. I got a little work that I need to do around the house. It doesn't make any sense. It's a rather crazy twist to the story. I mean, who in their right mind would miss a celebration like that? And yet when Jesus tells stories, parables, it points to something deeper about each one of us and deeper about humanity. He points out things that make no sense many times but are very true. Because so often we are invited to the wedding banquet and we don't go to the celebration. Just look at the ones who didn't go to the celebration at the wedding banquet of the king. It says they went off to their farms and their businesses. They went off to make a little money, take care of what they needed to get done, to rely on themselves to make sure that everything was taken care of. They didn't have any time for wedding feasts because they had work that needed to be done. It's a little bit like Scrooge in the play A Christmas Carol. All work and no play. Always relying upon himself because he could not trust in anyone else. And in the end, he ends up alone. And God is inviting us to a wedding banquet, inviting us to rely upon God to provide the generous feast, that we don't have to only rely upon ourselves, but that we can trust in God to provide for us, trust in God to give us what we need, to care for our deepest needs, to provide a sense of identity and worth. But instead, we choose to look to ourselves, to our own abilities, to depend upon ourselves to take care of things instead of depending on God. And essentially, we say, thanks for the invite, but I've got some work I need to do. We place our value and our worth instead on what we do, instead of on whose we are. And in doing so, we miss out on the celebration. But this king has a banquet ready, and those who were invited won't come, and so the king is going to have a party regardless. He is not going to let them rain on his parade. So those who were invited would not come, and he sends out the messengers into the streets to go get more people to come to the party. He tells them to gather anyone they can find, the good and the bad, to bring them into the celebration. It's a rather interesting little detail that's added there, that the good and the bad are invited to the celebration. So often when we think about the kingdom of heaven, the great banquet, we think about that all the good people are going to be there. But instead, we hear that the kingdom of heaven is filled with the good and the bad. All the sinners are there too. Everyone gets an invite, the good and the bad, and God is gathering everyone into the kingdom. The only expectation is that we trust that we are invited to the banquet, that the king is inviting you to the banquet, and that we come to celebrate. Many times when people talk about this great banquet, about the kingdom of heaven, we talk about how the kingdom of heaven is for all believers. And when we talk about what it means to all be believers, we talk about belief as something we need to say or do. We have to believe the correct thing, say the right thing, I believe in Jesus, make sure that we have done maybe the right things, then we go to heaven. And many times, in this ways, we turn belief into something that we are doing because we have to say or believe in the right things. And when we do that, we turn ourselves into that first group because it's all about us and what we're doing and making sure that we are doing and saying the right things, relying on ourselves instead of relying on God. Now, don't get me wrong. I do think that all those who believe are the ones who are part of the kingdom of heaven. But instead, I don't see believing as having to believe a certain set of statements to be true. Instead, what we believe in is the promise given to us. Believe in the promise that you and I are invited into a banquet, that we believe and trust in the one who is giving the invitation. I know it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around the difference between those things, but one of the best ways that I can think of to explain this is to think about a relationship with a significant other. If I say to my husband Joel here, I love you, and Joel says to me, I don't believe you. You don't really love me. You just want my money. You guys pay him well. So, or maybe I don't believe you. You just feel bad for me right now, or whatever it might be. Then, for whatever reason Joel has that he doesn't believe that I love him, he will not experience that love. Now, my love for Joel has not changed any. I continue to say, I love you, Joel. But he won't experience that love until he believes those to be true words. Until he trusts these words as true words. And once he believes these words, I love you, then he will experience the benefits of that love. And the same then is true for us in our invitation to the banquet. That God says to you, I love you. Come to the banquet and celebrate. God's inviting you to a grand celebration, inviting you into the kingdom of heaven. All you have to do is believe that you're invited, to trust in the one giving the invitation. And I wish the story ended right there, because it's a great story. But then we get to this part about this guy who doesn't have the right wedding garment, and how he gets thrown into the outer darkness. I don't really like this part of the story. I just wanted to stop it a few verses earlier. It would have been a lovely sermon at that point. But instead, we hear about how the messengers have gathered the good and the bad into this grand banquet, and then there's a wedding guest who doesn't have on the correct wedding robe. Now the king approaches him about this, and the king says, "Why, friend, are you not wearing your correct wedding robe?" And the man stands there speechless. And then it says he's thrown into the outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. I have to say, this is rather harsh treatment for someone who did not get dressed right. Needless to say, there has been a lot of discussion and conversation about this part of the story because it's very disturbing to us. Some say that the wedding custom of the time was that the host would provide this wedding robe that this man was supposed to put on. This definitely could be the case. There are many things we don't know about wedding customs of the time. But what we do know is we can find from the text what it tells us. It tells us that the host, that the king, came to this man, and the king comes up to this man and he says, "Friend, how did you get in?" He doesn't come to him in anger. "Why are you not dressed right?" He comes approaching him as a friend. "Friend, how did you get into the party?" And it says that the man is speechless. He says nothing. He refuses to relate to the king at all. He actually acts like the king doesn't even exist. He ignores him, refuses to even acknowledge his existence or respond. If he had said to the king, "Oh, I forgot it. I lost it. I don't have one. I was running a little late. I was in a rush to get here." Anything. It would have acknowledged the king as being there, being in conversation with him. There would have been relationship. But the man says nothing to the king. Acts like he's not even there. And so the king doesn't exist for the man. And so the man, in many ways, is already in the outer darkness because he doesn't even acknowledge that he's at a wedding in the first place. The interesting thing that we see here is that the one who is thrown out is not the sinner, the bad person who's thrown out. As I said earlier, the messengers went out and they brought in the good and the bad. They were all brought in. The one who is thrown out is the one who refuses to even acknowledge that there is a king or a wedding banquet going on. Refuses to even acknowledge the host's presence. And so he's already in the outer darkness. As we reflect on this parable in light of its introduction, "The Kingdom of Heaven is like," I'm reminded of the final book in C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia series, The Last Battle. There are the main characters, Lucy and Edmund and Susan and Peter, who are gathered there, along with all the rest of the characters from the other adventures that have happened in Narnia. And as they are gathered there in the midst of the last battle, we see that an end is coming to the kingdom of Narnia. Eventually, these heroes find themselves with their backs against a wall, against a stable, and the enemies are surrounding them on all sides, and they know that the end has come. The end is near, and there's nowhere to go. They realize that there's a door in the stable behind them, and so they go through that door into the stable, and they adjust their eyes once they're in the stable, and they find that the door that they've come through is actually really a doorway into another world, into the world of Narnia, the world they've just left, but it's a more perfect Narnia than they ever could have imagined. It's an ideal Narnia. And then, as they're there suddenly in this perfect, ideal Narnia, the great king of Narnia, Aslan the Lion, who is the God figure, the Christ figure throughout these Chronicles of Narnia. Aslan the Lion comes out and lays out for them a great and lavish feast and invites them to partake of this wondrous food. And they join in the celebration. They are there feasting. They're there feasting. Everyone except the dwarves. The dwarves are in there, but the dwarves do not believe in Aslan. They do not trust in Aslan. And so as everyone else begins to feast, the dwarves began to eat as well. Now they are there in the new Narnia. They are there in the ideal Narnia. They are there in the new creation. But they think they're still in a stable. And so they, as they eat, they say such things as, "Oh, I really don't like eating hay. Imagine drinking water from a trough that a donkey has been in." And the others who are there are sort of shocked at the way these dwarves are responding, and they realize that the dwarves can't see it. They cannot see that they are in the new world. They can't experience the wonder of it all. They're partaking of the lavish feast, and they don't even realize it's a lavish feast. And so the others who are gathered there ask Aslan, "How can we help these dwarves? How can we help them to experience, to know that they're here?" And then Aslan responds, "They will not let us help them. They have chose cunning instead of belief. Their prison is only in their minds. Yet they are in that prison. And so afraid of being taken in, they cannot be taken out." Those who are not at the feast, at the king's banquet, are those who do not realize that they are at a feast, who do not accept that they are loved and accepted by grace, who do not believe this to be true, who cannot believe that they're already in, who do not believe and trust in this love given to them by God, to believe that they're already at God's banquet. God is throwing a banquet. There is a wedding and everyone is invited. Jesus tells us the kingdom of heaven is like a king who had a wedding banquet for his son. He wants everyone to come and to feast. All are invited, the good and the bad. You are invited to the wedding feast. Come and celebrate. Amen.